Love this podcast? Support this show through the supporter feature from Acast. It's up to you how much you give and there's no regular commitment. Just hit the link in the show description to support now.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/news ad free. That's amazon.com/news ad free to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot. We charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Attention, collectors of vinyl. Have you ever gone into a record store and felt overwhelmed by all the unfamiliar options? Are you frustrated by the constantly increasing prices of classic rock staples? Do you avoid streaming music or long for the days when music was recommended to you by a friend instead of an algorithm? If the answer to any of these questions is yes, then check out I'd Buy That for a Dollar, a podcast about inexpensive, common, and underappreciated records that are waiting to be rediscovered. Each week, hosts Sean, Jeremy, and Peter discuss an album and the artist's history. Previous episodes include selections by The Isley Brothers, The Carpenters, The Doobie Brothers, and Donna Summer, among others. Become a bargain bin pro and impress all your friends with cool music trivia. Listen to I'd Buy That for a Dollar wherever you get your podcasts. Please consider supporting Black Women United YEG for the protection and advancement of Black women and girls in Alberta. You can learn more about them at bwunited.ca. They are always looking for donations and volunteers. So please, again, support Black Women United YEG for the protection and advancement of Black women and girls in Alberta. Again, that website is bwunited.ca.
Creative control, creative control. Comedy, art, and sometimes rock and roll. Let's do a public opinion poll. Raise your hand if you love creative control. 'Cause when Vish is unleashed, well, you... Oh, sorry, I didn't see you there. I was just working on a tribute song to my favorite podcast, Creative Control, with Vish Khanna. My name is Matthias, and I play in a band called The Burning Hell, but more importantly, I support Creative Control on Patreon, and I think you should too. Quality long-form arts journalism is like a magical talking unicorn. It definitely exists, but it can be really hard to find. Fortunately for us, Vish makes it easy with hundreds of funny, thought-provoking, well-researched, and engaging interviews with artists from all over the world. Your flexible monthly donation on Patreon will get you plenty of special exclusive treats and help Vish keep his podcast well-fed and cared for properly, the way a magical unicorn deserves.
To make your flexible monthly donation to Creative Control, please visit patreon.com/creativecontrol today.
José Miguel Contreras is a super talented and beloved multi-instrumentalist, singer, recording engineer, songwriter, and producer based in Toronto, Ontario. Since 1989, Contreras has been the constant and driving force in By Divine Right, a fantastically joyous rock band whose rotating members have included Feist and people from Broken Social Scene and Holy Fuck, among others. The longest-running iteration of the band currently consists of Alicia Haugen, Jordy Dines, and Contreras, and Fortune Stellar Records released By Divine Right's 11th album. I want to say it's 11. I did my best to count. I think it's the 11th album. They released that album, whatever it is, 11 or not, on September 23rd, 2022. It's a double LP called Automato, and it prompted Jose to return to this podcast to discuss things like how Ontario cities are starting to look and feel like Jersey Shore. The time I reviewed a live By Divine Right show in St. John's, Newfoundland. Why the band has regained momentum it lost in 2016. The making and meaning behind the lovely and spirited songs on Automato. The Smiths, The Cure, and the Steve Miller Band. Why he loves Shotgun Jimmy, future plans, and much more. A part of the Entertainment One Network with the support of listeners like you who follow and subscribe to this podcast and spread the word about it, and make flexible monthly donations at patreon.com/creativecontrol, plus in-kind support from Pizza Trocadero, The Bookshelf, and Planet Bean Coffee, respectively, in Guelph, Ontario, and Granddad's Donuts in Hamilton, Ontario. This is episode 721 of Creative Control, featuring the lovely and talented Jose Contreras of By Divine Right, with your host, me, Vish Khanna. You got a lot of cards. Hi, Jose. How are you?
Hi. Hi, Vish. I accidentally hit mute.
Oh, that's when okay.
When you said hi, but I heard it. How are you? I'm great. It's nice. I'm still in my pajamas.
Oh, well, that's lovely. I'm not in my pajamas, and I'm earlier than you, I think. I'm 2 hours behind you, right? Are you in Toronto today?
I'm in Toronto.
Nice. How are things going in Toronto for you today?
Today's been absolutely lovely. It's kind of chilly fall morning, and it's very mellow today for me.
Do you know that it's supposed to be like 27 degrees Celsius in Edmonton today at the end of September?
There you go, eh? That's how it happens. It feels like my entire life things have been out of whack, so.
Yeah. What is it, just to compare, what's the high supposed to be today in Ontario?
I don't know. I don't know. I haven't talked to my mom yet.
Right.
Da-dum-bum.
Yeah. Fair enough. Yeah, the weather's not that exciting. I don't usually pay attention either, but when it's freakishly hot
in
September,
is a bit weird.
Then you're just like, because I woke up, I'm like, why am I so hot? We sleep with the windows open, but I was like, it's hot. Too hot. And then my wife looked at her telephone and it said, oh, yeah, it's supposed to be a scorcher. Anyway, just wondering, things are good in Toronto?
Things are, you know, there are lots of condos. It's very condo-y in Toronto.
Oh, what I mean, that's been the case for some time. Is it worse?
It's worse. Yeah, in our hood where we live, like we live in a kind of like uptown, like St. Clair West, the last little corner of the core, apparently is what it's called. Hmm. We wouldn't have called it that 20 years ago. We would have called it nowhere 20 years ago.
Right.
But now it's sort of like even where there's art studios in this neighborhood now. Yeah, so many condos. And, you know, I mean, sort of culturally, it's, you know, like you ask how Toronto is, it's slowly turning into Jersey Shore.
Yeah. I think I never saw that show, but I think I know what you mean.
I've never saw that show either. We were joking about it the other day. And then just as we said it, and listen, I don't mean to judge people's wardrobe choices, but at that moment, this dude walked by with like frosted tips.
Hmm.
We're not talking about a young guy either.
Yeah.
Frosted tips, sort of like pleather pants, and like a blouse that's got flames on it.
Oh, wow. So totally.
Yeah. Jersey Shore.
Yeah, totally.
Or like, and you know, last time I was in Guelph, I was like trying to describe to someone, because we did a little tour of Ontario in March, how intense.
Mm-hmm.
It just feels like it's gotten. Like I'd be on, you know, we went to Windsor, London, you know, towns like that.
Yeah.
And I know what those towns are like. I've lived partly in them, you know, and hung out there for most of my life. I'm like, when the fuck did Ontario turn into Ohio?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? And then we went to Guelph and was in shock to see it in Guelph too. Like someone was like, what do you mean? I was like, well, it looks like Fort Lauderdale.
Yeah.
You know?
Yep. Yep.
You know that corner, the corner in Guelph, Party Corner, Puke Corner, whatever it's called?
Yeah, that would be Mac Donnell and Wyndham kind of? Yeah.
Yeah. And I mean, I fought my way through, you know, some frat giants and, you know, mini skirts in a blizzard to get some French fries after a gig. But like the last time I was there, you had to walk down the middle of the road like it was like Fort Lauderdale.
Yeah.
Like just like hundreds of people there for spring break, you know, in June.
Yeah. Yeah, it is happening. I appreciate what you're saying. What you're describing wasn't on the list of why we moved out of Ontario, but some of that sort of stuff was just the vibe felt weird socioculturally, politically, and as I've talked about ad nauseum, maybe for some people, the real estate market was prohibitive.
Mm-hmm, yeah.
It was very complicated. So yeah, and I don't think, Jose, you've known a lot of people in Ontario over your lifetime.
Mm-hmm.
Are you sensing a slight, some sort of exodus? Is it a little bit of an exodus?
Absolutely there is, yeah. And I think it is sort of like the prohibitive real estate. Although, you know, none of us can run away culturally from it, you know, and it's coming for you anywhere you are.
Yeah.
And I think what we're experiencing and that I've spoken about in the last few years is like really the end of the 20th century, you know, such a celebrated, like sort of like, I think like the culture itself had convinced itself that it would be, you know, it would be Coca-Cola and McDonald's for the rest of time, you know,
yeah.
And
yeah.
The king of rock and roll or whatever thing that seemed so important, you know, and so institutional to our inner souls. And it just is not the case. You know, there's lots of beautiful, vibrant people out there who just do not care about whatever was a priority 40 mm-hmm. years ago or 30 years ago, which is basically 30 years ago was the 90s. It's crazy to think about. And then also lots of sort of like culturally devoid people that have no idea what the hell was going on. So we're seeing the end of culture, and what's up for now is up for grabs. Who knows what the spirit of the age is?
Yeah.
It certainly isn't how cute things were, you know? That's how it feels. You know, while I'm rambling at you, you know, we noticed the other day, you know, and I don't want to talk ad nauseum when that sort of like a recent sort of like scandal involving the Arcade Fire happened, right?
Yeah.
It was around the same time as we found out that the Page and Panel had closed, that beautiful bookstore on the ground floor of the Toronto Reference Library.
Oh, it closed.
It closed, right? Which was part of the whole Toronto Comic Books Art Fest festival. And just like, I don't know if you're familiar with that store. It was a beautiful, beautiful little place full of graphic novels and interesting books and like, you know, really cute stuffies and like little models. Kind of nerdy, not like regular stuffies, but like, you know, if you wanted a stuffy of, you know, like a Totoro or a Milou, mm-hmm. you know, before mm-hmm. like, a, you know, Snowy, before those things were more across the culture. And just its closing at the same time as that other scandal and a few other things really did feel like, oh, wow, even like that beautiful, hopeful, early aughties vibe of amazing graphic design and, you know, sort of like this like very optimistic, you know, there was a, you know, everyone's favorite band was the Unicorns. You know what I mean? Like,
Like
it just seemed like, oh, wow, that's over.
Well, I mean, what you're commenting on a little bit is, in some ways, a good resistance of monoculture. But in the other, there's not any one thing anymore, if that mm-hmm. makes sense. Like, so there's nothing to galvanize around. It's really important or in the current moment. And I think this is an offshoot of the 90s. It's very important to like as many different things and be as open to as many different things as possible. And I think the internet really blew that up. On some level. And so this is, I don't mean to take away from the scandals you're talking about because I didn't quite follow mm-hmm. the connection between the bookstore closing and the Arcade Fire thing. So there's something going on there.
This is sort of like the hopefulness of that era, early 2000s, right?
Yeah.
And like the sort of like innocence and like, wow, there's something more enlightened happening. The internet's actually maybe doing a good thing for everyone. And just seeing those two things die, it just seemed timely.
Yeah, you know? I see what you're saying now. Okay, well, yeah, I do think we are fractured, right? And it's very hard to, like when I was a kid, everyone would know, even if you didn't know the music, you would just know certain names. You would know Michael Jackson. You would know Michael Jordan. You would know Mike Tyson. You would know everyone named Mike, basically. And everyone would be like, oh yeah, that I know that Mike. That's different from the other Mike. But now it's, I don't even, like it's hard. It's very hard to transcend into the sort of zeitgeist and be like, I'm the best at something, or I'm that's the one we all agree. I guess Beyonce or something is kind of close, but not really. Yeah, it's very complicated. So I appreciate all of those things. We were talking a little bit about Toronto. I feel like Toronto figures heavily on this beautiful new By Divine Right album, which, correct me if I'm mispronouncing this, is it Automato?
Automato.
Automato, yeah. Well, sorry, before we get into Toronto, what is the origin of the name even?
Well, originally we wanted to make a record called Onomatopoeia.
Mm-hmm.
And when the band, you know, we were on a bit of a roll like in 2014, 2015, 2016, before the cracks sort of appeared. And so it made sense to make a record called Onomatopoeia that we would just like be able to pull off really quickly, like the way that we were pulling everything off at that point. And then when it didn't work out, it just morphed into something else and into something else, into something else. And then I felt like near the end of the record, it morphed back into a version of the record we were we're going to make in 2017, Onomatopoeia. And it became, and I was playing with the spelling of onomatopoeia, like automatopoeia or like, you know, auto. And it became automato. You know, and it's kind of a various jokes inside it. You know, I was born in Chile, and Chile has a lot of jokes about a guy named Don Otto, Mr. Otto, who's sort of this, you know, naive and friendly and spaced out and German guy, Otto, who, you know, who kind of like, you know, like every culture makes fun of someone. You know, in Canada, we have our, you know, jokes about. And so. I remember one time when you said I used the N-word in Newfoundland.
Oh, did I say that? Did I say that to you? I don't remember saying that.
Because we covered, I think you put it in a review of our show.
Oh, I did?
You did great. Because we covered that Stomping Tom song, Man Moon Newfie.
Right.
And you're like that we ended with a cover of that song and like that we got, that you know, that people were so... happy about it or whatever that we got away with using the N-word in Newfoundland.
Oh.
But anyway, so...
That's not bad. Is that... That was just me trying to make a little joke. See, that thing...
I know, was it?
That was one of those things where I would go to that... So that was at the Lanya Vanya Festival, right? And...
That's right.
I had gotten this habit of... One of my print assignments was to go places and review things, comedy shows, music shows, whatever. And I would write them on my phone. And I would write them almost instantaneously. It was a different kind of practice for me. It was very impulsive, instinctual. I would watch the thing. I wouldn't do it during the show, but I would watch the thing. And then as soon as it was done in between bands or whatever, I'd be like, well, I might as well write this little review because it didn't have to be too long. And so I'd do it and then I'd send it off and it was done. And like that's a lot different than what I used to have to do. Anyway, they were talking.
Oh, yeah, it was published in the morning. I woke up in the morning. It was already out. I was like, hey, we played a 9 out of 10 show last night. Oh. Thanks, Vish.
Oh, did I give it a 9 out of 10? That's good. That's a good score. I don't even remember. See, I don't remember any of this. My point is, it's fleeting. The show would happen. I'd write it down. I'd hit send. And then someone like you, years later, still remembers it. And I'm like, oh, right. I've done so many of those things. I don't even remember what I said. That's bad.
Well, for us, it was a big deal for us, you know, that time. We started, you know, it's funny because I always cared about my band and I always gave it everything I've got. And maybe it's just a thing of the despair of getting old and realizing that, you know, like the road's not as long as it was. And that things start to mean more and you become, you know, maybe incredibly uncool, become more sincere and more sentimental. But like, we were really caring at that point. And I think that's why in 2014, around there, like things like the three of us elevated somehow, you know, and as humble and as like eternal sort of like losers that the BDR are, it stopped mattering because we were elevating, you know, in an emotional sense of what we were giving to it.
Yeah.
So that's why we remember that. So anyways, there's an element of that in the Automato, that like sort of a reference to like a Chilean joke figure, like Otto, but it's also maybe a tip of the hat to the sort of kraut rock, the sort of Germanesque element of where all music is right now, whether you know it or not.
Yeah,
you know, like, not everyone that's going boom, 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 you know, like basically the indie rock beat.
Yes.
You know, we've been playing it our whole lives. Yeah. Might not have realized just how crowdy we've been the whole time, you know. So there's that. And then there's the idea of motto being like sort of a personal philosophy or whatever you would describe motto being.
Well, it's a fantastic record, and I want to dig into it a little bit with you in a moment. But I want to go back to what you were saying. Thanks. About Cracks appearing sometime after that Newfoundland show. Cracks appearing. I don't know exactly what that refers to. Why were there cracks?
We felt kind of invincible, right? And I certainly did. And I was fooled by being a youthful 45-year-old to thinking that that was going to be the case forever, you know, that I had somehow... And, maybe we were partying a little bit harder than we could sustain, you know. I might not be the best role model for that. For years, it seemed like I could party and work and be really efficient.
I see.
And then when Jordy, you know, this is going back to Toronto, sort of realizing that, you know, he just couldn't get a foothold in Toronto, even though he'd been here most of his adult life, you know. And we'd had such a great time in Newfoundland a few times that he was like, I'm moving to Newfoundland.
Right.
And I was like, totally great. That's totally awesome. We were traveling so much that year. We flew around a whole bunch. We pulled it off with a lot of style, like, you know, like personally, like without being like falling apart everywhere we went, you know. And we always managed to perform well, that we thought that won't be a problem for the band. And then Lish moved to Vancouver. And so all of a sudden, literally, my two bandmates were on opposite sides of the... of the country, and I was producing records in Vancouver that year, so it didn't seem like a big deal for me. I was like going back and forth all the time, but it did get in the way. You know, maybe a couple of the opportunities we had to come together and make some music were suddenly kind of like turned into crapshoots by the cracks of which I speak.
Yeah,
and then we missed a couple of windows to capitalize on that energy from 2016. You know, around the time that, you know, all of a sudden, you know, you got us at that show at Hillside, right?
Oh, I did? Oh, yeah, right. Yeah.
We were, or at least you pushed for it, right? Where we really shined. I'm not out to, you know, we don't have an agent, right? We don't have big management at the time. We don't have a label. We don't have anything,
right?
You know? And it had been decades, you know, that like for us to play a show like that is a big deal. And then for the guys who run the festival being like, well, saying to me, you know, the word is that was the best, you know what I'm saying, that we did really good at
you
that
did.
Show.
Yeah, I do. This and, is all coming back to me now. Yeah, I gave a little push. Yeah, that's right. And you guys did play fantastic. That's right.
You know, and we weren't stressed. There was no stress. It was just like we were just on a roll. So I really just thought that we'd be in a really good place, and it was a real surprise when all of a sudden it just seemed like we were starting to crumble, sort of, as much as we loved each other, and it took a long time to make that record, to finally be able to get together and make it, you know, and the band that came together to make it was a much, much more humble situation.
I see,
you know?
Okay.
At that point, I would have said to you, it's like, we could back up Nick Cave, and he would tell us we were the best afterwards.
Yeah.
I would have said something like that, because that's how it felt at the time. Like, we were like, we just always got it, you know?
Yeah, well, I hear that confidence on this record, for sure. There are a number of references to hotels and motels and partying. It's sort of like a band... behavior, I think. Is that fair? Do you feel like this is kind of capturing life on the road or something like that?
A little bit, yeah. I mean, you know, the origin of Automato being Onomatopoeia was that it was our record, that, you know, we were going to play it together. It would be maybe the first record where, you know, all the drums were played by the drummer and all the bass played by the bass player. And you know what I mean? Yeah. And where I decided on the keys of the song so that it was good for me and Lish to sing together, and the grooves being grooves that I would never have to, you know, occasionally you have a groove where you have to kind of like push your drummer to play something out of their comfort zone. And none of that was like that. So yeah, that was it.
Yeah.
100%.
Yeah. And Toronto, I think, figures, actually, before I get to that, there's a really, I want to point to St. Leon's, where you and Lish did this really remarkable it's not even a call and response, like alternate singing of lyrics where like you that's remarkable. I thought that was really inventive, very clever.
Oh, thank you so much. Yeah. I did another interview recently where they were like, what's the album that you guys listen to the most? What were you trying to listen to? And really there was nothing trying to listen to. We just wanted to sound like ourselves. That's the whole point. And I mean, you know, it's easy to find out my influences that I wear no matter what. And
well, there's a song.
Yeah, I'm glad you like that song.
Yeah, no, that song's great. And then there's songs like, there's a song here called "How Soon Is Now," which for those of us who follow popular music will be like, wait, did they just do the Smith song? Because there's a Smith song, a very famous Smith song called "How Soon Is Now." And I hear a little bit more. I know he's not like a very well-respected person anymore, but I hear more Morrissey and Smith stuff here. Is that? I don't mean to be like spot the influences, but I don't know.
No,
like,
it's true. I think this is a bit. There is more gothy new wave vibes on this record, and in a way, that's my high school roots popping through. And I just thought, like, if the Replacements could have a song called "Let It Be," then I could have a song called "How Soon Is Now."
Well, it's that's a wonderful song, and then one of the strongest vocal performances of your that I'm familiar with of all your work comes with "The Weeping Man." I thought. And I was, you know the song I mean? Do you know what I'm getting? Mm-hmm. Does that feel like a particularly strong and dynamic vocal for you? I know it's hard to be objective, but it feels like you're doing a lot of different things.
It felt pretty magical song once I accepted it, you know? Because when I first found that song, I just thought like, oh, I've completely forgotten that it was on my phone. And I was like, I'll never show anyone this song. But that was like sort of like 2016, and things started getting very weird. I think all of us, like at the end of 2016, was like a gut punch.
It sounds like it very, very much traumatized you in some ways. Yes, yes.
Like, and in my partner Amy and me and my family, we're political refugees.
Yeah,
you know,
yeah.
But before the coup in Chile, the right wing. Americans paid for a fake truck strike.
Oh, did they?
Right.
Oh.
There was a fake. Yeah. You know what I mean? Like, so like, it's like, I think that like, the end of 2016 really seemed to pop our bubbles as far as like some, it was hard to be like a sunshiny optimist too much after that, you know? So a song like "Weeping Man" definitely after a while started to feel more and more real. And like, I went from like, I'll never sing this song to anyone to like, oh, this is a really important song when I sing it.
It's a beautiful song, but I will say, so I was playing it kitchen last night, as just prepping for our chat, and the record's been playing throughout the house for a few weeks now, but I had it playing and I was like, there's really kind of this, I was saying to my wife, this is like a Smiths or 80s kind of vibe here, and she's like, well, this sort of sounds almost like Bono or someone, like just the cooing and the richness of the, you know, whatever. Bono was a good singer, and he could do lots of different things with his voice. And I don't know if that guy or that band, U2, means anything to you, but it reminded me of that a little bit too.
Wow, cool. I mean, I'll take it as a compliment. I'm not a huge Bono fan.
No, well, it's hard to be. It's definitely hard to be, but he can do stuff he's long been able to do. Every once in a while, I think about these scrappy bands that got together, and then it turns out the singer can really, really, really sing in terms of, like, they can do, like, stuff that you would associate with, like, opera or crooning or, you know, and you're just like, what the hell? Like, it's just this random, it seems random when they tell the story. Oh, yeah, I had a poster up in the music store saying, musicians wanted, I play drums or whatever, and you're like, really? And then, or Paul Westerberg, like, you're just like, holy shit. Like, that's your singer? Like, how the hell, these untrained singers always mystify me. Anyway, all I'm getting at is that's a really remarkable performance, and it does to call back to, as I go through the record, like, and then the next song, by the way, for those who haven't heard the record yet, is called "Smokies and Cannonballs," and I don't know if this will rub your rhubarb, Jose, but A little bit of Steve Miller Band. A little bit of Steve Miller Band coming through on that one.
I love that. I didn't know. Please rub my rhubarb. You know, I didn't know. You know, that song, Smokey, started out as a country song. And then we were like, how can we play this in the BDR? So we just sped it up. And then it turned into a rock and roll song.
Well, it totally has that. Now that I've said it, can you objectively feel a little Steve Miller Band vibe there?
You know, I'd have to find out what Steve Miller does. You know, I mean, I know he's a midnight toker, and I've certainly been there. But, you know, one of the things I was going to say about, which is so funny, you know Scott Shopkeeper from Guelph?
Mm-hmm.
He at one point referred to me as a crooner, as a compliment, right? And I loved it. It cracked me up. I think that my vocals got damaged at one point, and I used to be able to sing full voice a lot easier.
Yeah.
But I had laryngitis like 3 times because of my kids, like the last like 2018, around there. And then, so now it's hard for me to sing full voice all the time.
Hmm.
So I kind of discovered this shelf in my voice, and it feels good to sing there, but it is kind of croony in it. It's funny.
It's not like, just so people understand, it's not like super clean or super cloying or pandering. It's just a very it's interesting that you say you can't sing in full voice, because this is one of the most this is one of your richest vocal performances, this record, I think. And it shows your range in ways, and really wonderful lyrics as well, and you know, again, very catchy. Problems of the Professional, in a way, not a lot of lyrics, but you really hit that, you know, Profit From My Mistakes gets in my head, which is kind of like, it's not even really, I guess it's the chorus. It's just like this hook, and it gets in my head, and you're still like, just, it's remarkable. All I'm getting at is really wonderful record all around, and it's got a lot of range to it. A little haze to it though too. And I don't know where that's just your recording style, I think.
We're hazy. It's ambient. It's a little auto motto, you know, it's definitely there. And, you know, I love Prince too. And I've always added like, psh and psh to like snares.
Yes, exactly.
And this record has a lot of
yeah, once absolutely. In a while. Yeah, no, it's a really like, it definitely, the whole record has a vibe. If you've got it on, it's you feel like you're in a particular place, if that makes sense, place and time. So I appreciate that. Now, I've been trying to talk about Toronto a few different times, and I keep getting sidetracked by my own questions. This feels a like, also, I mentioned the partying and the hotels and motels, and there's a reference to Calgary and, you know, like a bit of travel going on. But is this, a particularly Toronto-centric record in other ways?
You know, it's a record that comes from my garage, you know, which is where I'm sitting right now. And this is where we made the record. And it's pretty humble, you know, like I live on St. Clair West. I'm no longer attached to the town. The way one would have been, and the beginning of this, you know, like when it was, the record was on Amanapia, we were traveling tons, and I would have thought that by 2022, who knows where I would have been or where we would have been, but it didn't work out that way. So like the Toronto aspect of it is kind of just sort of like very like, okay, well, what have we got left from all these crumbled pieces? Well, we've got ourselves, we got each other, and we got this garage. You know,
yeah,
and so maybe that's a sort of the Toronto vibe, you know, like, and like my garage is really great, like it's insulated, and I got a piano and beautiful equipment and stuff. But in that sense, it's pretty Toronto. You know, I feel very Toronto too, but that doesn't mean that I feel a ton of kinship with what is the majority of what might be considered Toronto culture right now, which to me feels pretty mall culture-y.
Right. Not
mass-produced.
Not Jersey Shore like Guelph. Wait, which one was Jersey Shore? Was Toronto also Jersey Shore?
Toronto's kind of... everywhere is Jersey Shore, yeah. But like, yeah, Toronto's definitely Jersey Shore. I just think Guelph, I was trying to describe to someone what the sidewalk was like at that corner. It's like Fort Lauderdale, where you're like, I'm fighting my way through like 80 miniskirts into like the walls of like 100, you know, like body lip builders.
Well, you know, given your sort of longevity and your trajectory, I think you, as a creative person, have lived through these weird cycles where live music is really live, I guess, guitar-oriented music in particular, comes in and out of vogue. It's often replaced by vapid stuff. or a dance culture. You know, the famous thing in the 90s was all the rock clubs became like dance clubs.
Yeah, it was over.
Yeah, it seemed to be over. Do you have a
95?
Yeah, exactly. And it was, and I have theories about this. I think Kurt Cobain's suicide was so depressing for so many people, and even the club owners are like, "Yeah, can't do this anymore. Let's go back to disco, you know, and let's just try to have some fun." Like, what the hell is going on over with these people and their music? So I think that happened, but then it swung back around in the early 2000s. I don't want to give a rudimentary rock music history 101 class during this podcast, but all I was going to get to is you mentioned sort of deteriorating things going on in various cities in Ontario. Do you have a perspective on where music like the music you make kind of sits right now in terms of appreciation? Because I know you play shows, people come out, but do you have like an overarching, like, are things okay? Are things healthy for the kind of indie rock, if you will, that you make? Or is it still fighting the club people? It sounds like it's some combination of the both, but what do you think?
Yeah, I think that, you know, I was horribly you know, I'd never had any, like, tons of... I was not a very ambitious young person, and not because I didn't have ambitions or hope, but I was never like, and I'm going to be famous, and I'm going to do this. Mm-hmm. And, you know, like, that was never in my plans. I just wanted to have a nice time and have a cool guitar and a nice girlfriend, and, you know, that kind of thing.
Yeah.
Eat guacamole. So... I'm not going to stress too hard, but yeah, like, no, I don't, you know, I worry for young people sometimes, you know, my son is playing in a band right now, and, or even like young people that I've recorded that were like, say 25 years ago, that kind of thing. And wondering about, is there a scene for these people? Is there somewhere for them to go? Right. Cause you remember in Toronto, there was a point where I'd go to a show every night.
Yeah.
I'd go to two shows every night.
Yeah.
And there was always something happening, and there was always people there. So you could go and hang out, and it was like vibrant, and you'd end up at people's places, and music was happening. And I'm just hopeful that that is happening in some capacity. And I think that it is. Like my son and his friends, they're like 16, 17. They're definitely passionate about music, and they're passionate about the bands they love. And they love most of the same bands we love.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? You might just as likely to hear whatever Car Seat Headrest or, like, you know, Heaven Knows I'm Miserable Now.
Yeah.
You know, like,
yeah.
they love, they know all the good shit.
Yeah.
So I'm hopeful that it's there. I think, like, if it's like trying to look at a mass market, I don't always follow it. But, you know, when people are like, at some point when they're like, Imagine Dragons just won the best rock band award, you know, like that.
Yeah.
So I guess that's the end of rock music.
Right.
Well, I guess like things have been pretty, like, you know, by the late 80s, early 90s, it was already what, like, if it's popular, it must be shitty.
Yeah.
You know? Yeah. So I've always felt that way, you know, like one of my greatest heroes is Syd Barrett, and nobody knows really too much about Syd Barrett outside of like very nerdy circles.
Mm-hmm.
And he'll never be popular. Mm. So there, it's not really any of my business.
Well, I don't even mean popularity. I just mean sustainability.
Sustainability.
Yeah. You.
I got very lucky. Yeah. I'm very lucky that my trip is, you know, like, I made a record. We have no structure. The fact that Fortune Stellar, that Andrew and Shiloh came forward saying, "We love your band. We love your record. We know your discography. We see who you are. We want to put this out." I mean, that's a miracle.
Yeah.
I've never made money for anybody. You know what I mean? So, like, I need angels. Yeah. Without the angels, there's no By Divine Right.
Fair enough. Yeah, I think, and I appreciate that for sure. You know, I was looking at the track listing in front of me here and thinking of all these great songs like East Side Anthem, which gets in my head. Incredible groove there. Talking about St. Leon's or Middlemarch. Moon Jams. What I'm getting at is 4 minutes plus. A lighter 5 minutes and 19 seconds. A lot of stretched out songs here. 14 songs, 58 minutes. That's long these days. That's double vinyl territory.
And it is double vinyl, yeah.
And is this actually out on vinyl right now?
It isn't quite out yet. We were going to get them last week and this week, and then the there was a misprint where they missed one of the sides were blank. So we're going to get them next week or the week after.
Oh, okay.
It is double vinyl. And this record definitely is like, that shows you how far we lost the plot a little bit. Although, you know, the band that was touring in 2015, 2016, 2016, 15, around there, it was had turned into a thing where we could just make jam for a long time and people in the audience would be into it. So we just would jam, yeah, right? Yeah. And it was good. Yeah. Our songs were long. So when we went in to make this record, that was it. But we did kind of lose the plot a little bit as far as like, you know, the kind of like, you know, advice I would give bands that I was producing, which is like, yeah, definitely go long on this, or you know what, this song's worth it to figure out the shorter version because it'll fit really well. And you know, it's very unedited record. Everything's long form on this. Yeah, so, you know, yeah, where the intro of a song like "The Volcano" is like whatever, 15 reps.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's not even 12 or 16. It's just like, there's three riffs, you know, that kind of thing. I think that the next thing that we're working on is going to be like a much more like truffles, like a little flavor bomb.
Okay, yeah. So you are sort of conscientious and conscious of the fact that this is a little bit of a sprawl on some level.
It's a sprawl. Yeah. It really is, and we knew we were getting into that. You know Matt Charlton?
Yeah, of course. The guy from he used to does he still run that Pigeon Row publicity
Pigeon
thing?
Row, he does. He's got so many projects on the go, and he's doing all these wonderful things.
Yeah, that's
things.
Why I was like, I know Matt and I know what he's done, but I feel like he's I was just looking at this the other day. Some years ago, he started some Instagram account and followed me, so I followed it back cuz I like Matt, and I looked at it and it has been inactive since he started it, and I don't know what it is. I don't even know what it is. Like a green screen thing or something? I don't know what it is.
He does like so many television and film projects, and he still like does live videos for people and promo. But I sent him the record at one point, and I was like, you know, what do I do? And he right away was like, this is a wonderful record. And I'm like, should we edit it down? He's like, I came up with this track listing, and I don't think you need to cut it down. And he made the track listing for the record.
Oh, he sequenced the record.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so grateful that he did, because that's what we play live now. And we had no idea that there was a story. And half of the songs we would have, like, we were considering chopping, right, to make a single record.
So that's really a nice testament and compliment to Matt. But you said he saw a story there that you didn't recognize. As you ponder the sequence now and the order it sounds like you've even been playing them this way live. What to you is the ultimate? I've been kind of bouncing around what I think is going on various songs. Is there an overarching story to Automato that you can talk about?
I don't know. I don't know that there is. I could tell you that 5 years ago I thought that my life was going to be a lot more traveling and playing, and maybe a couple more records in the can, another solo record, another BDR record, maybe another Heat Death record with Shotgun Jimmy, a lot more.
Mm-hmm.
And in the end, this record ended up being a little bit more of an admission of like not having an endless amount of energy and chutzpah or whatever it is, like a non-ending amount of that I can't stay awake for 4 days in a row anymore the way I used to be able to, but also just how much I needed to have. Like, it was just a very domestic period in my life. Mm-hmm. And certainly the pandemic helped with that, but it just ended up that, like, the most important thing that happened in the last 5 years was making a beautiful, calm, cozy home with Amy and my kids. And I think that became high priority for Lish and Jordy. And even though I'm older than Lish and Jordy, our energy levels are very matched, you know? And I think that for all three of us, the priority was like, oh, it's actually time to heal, get our feet back on the ground, and get all domestic. And maybe that record reflects a little bit of like sort of like the looking at all the madness that's happened and just kind of healing. And it's trippy. It's a trippy record, you know?
Well, I mean, some of us have had, you might have had more of it, like microdosing normalcy again since the pandemic came. And then that usually manifests itself in doing some traveling or touring if you're a band. I've done a little bit of it, and I feel like it just heightened what I liked about what I liked learning rather about the pandemic was I don't actually mind stillness.
No.
I don't mind resting a little bit. I don't mind being at home with my family.
It's the best.
I quite like it. I took that for granted until I had no choice in the matter. And now I'm having trouble going back to the way it was because I've actually this is more comfortable. I'm not rushing around. I'm not, trying to get on an airplane or burning gasoline and killing the earth, Yeah. I have that vibe still, and I'm having trouble shaking it. Have you had any of that?
Definitely, yeah. It needs to be worth it. We're no longer partying, we're on time for everything now. On time, and immediately after sound check, we go back to our hotel and have a nap, nap, and then we get ready and go to the show, And
everything's more civilized. We just learned to be a little more civilized and
more
less
calm,
rushy.
Yeah. I wonder, yeah.
I hope this will have some sort of long-lasting impact, but I'm not back at it yet in terms of rushing around. I'm still hustling, but from here, and I don't mind that, and it feels civil. That's all I want to say about that. Now, speaking of civilization and people who are civil, Shotgun Jimmy, you alluded to, Jimmy actually appears on this record, right?
Yeah, he absolutely does. Of course. Yeah. He's really important to me.
Almost like a character, voice.
Well, it's so funny. Yeah, at the end of that song, we had the end of this song that used to have, a lot more other stuff on it, like strings and stuff like that. And I was like, Jimmy, rip a solo at the end of this song, as if like you've been on tour with us and you've heard us do this song like 10 times and you finally went, fuck it, I'm going to grab a guitar and play something really loud over this quiet ending. And instead, he sent me back this sort of like a voice memo almost, or like this sort of like him singing about a gentle part about going downtown to buy a piano and if I would meet him there with my van and help him take the piano down the stairs and load it into the van, right?
Yeah, yeah.
I could start, when I talk about Jimmy, I could start crying, right? I know I embarrass him a little bit, especially if I talk about him when he's there at a show. I like tear up and it's like, sorry. But
he's a very sweet guy. Yeah,
yeah, he's a beautiful friend. And isn't that? I love that part. And it's a little bit of the Heat Death sprinkle on a BDR record.
Yes,
the Heat Death being our little side project. And I love that part. And then he also left me a couple of voice memos over the years, which he's so hilarious, right? So he leaves this message saying like, "Buddy, put me on your album."
Yeah.
I'm singing on your Instagram machine. And it's like, should probably be track 15 on the new BDR. Shooting star, come on, buddy, you know who you are. You know who I am. Put me on your album. Anyways, and sure enough, it is track 15.
Yeah.
It
was meant to be. Yeah, no, there's some lovely little moments like that on this record. And I just wanted to highlight that because I found Jimmy's appearance. It's kind of spooky. Sorry, what song is it again that he's on?
He comes in at the end. The part where he's singing is at the end of Middle March.
Middle March, that's correct. Yeah, I love that. It's almost like a ghostly Sinatra thing or something at the end. It's really lovely. I like it. So I just wanted to highlight that. So Jose, we've talked about this record. We've talked about its girth, the fact that it's a double vinyl. Where can people go to learn more about Automato and By Divine Right?
I'd like to apologize to all the people that care about my band who are always like, your website hasn't been updated in a decade. Mm. I get a lot of those notes or like a lot of like, I love this song, but I can't find it anywhere. And I'm really sorry I haven't been more adept at keeping up with all that. And I've tried over the years, but it's hard to get a decent website. Right now, the thing that's updated the most is the Fortune Stellar website.
Mm-hmm.
And the artist page on the Fortune Stellar website, which we have a link to on our Instagram for people that are kind of paying attention.
Mm-hmm.
And other than that, I guess you can do good luck to you.
Google, By Divine Right, I think is what we're saying.
I was in the States and recently and really fortunate to have some friends down there and realized when I was down there that our two records that were out on Network in the late 90s aren't available in the States. They're not on Spotify or Bandcamp down there. Right. And I didn't know that there was a different Spotify and Bandcamp. Those records are up here online, but they're not down there. Isn't that weird?
Yeah, it is. That's odd.
And we don't own those records because we you know, matured under a different model of the industry than the rest of the indie, than the indie rockers.
I bet if you gave them money, you could probably get them back. Is the deal?
Oh yeah. If they, if I could get them to answer an email.
Oh yeah, that's a real bummer, man. Okay, well, I don't want to end this on a bummer. I just wanted to...
No, of course not.
I'll link to all the stuff that I can in the podcast
stuff. The Fortune Stellar.
Yeah.
I think it may be FortuneStellarRecords.com, probably, under the artist page.
Okay.
We'll have links to... And then Bandcamp, the By Divine Right Bandcamp, has stuff like probably like 5 or 6 of our records up there.
Yeah. Okay. So we'll send people there. And like I say, I'll link to stuff... in the podcast description. If we can go out on a song from this record, can you pick one for us, Jose, and tell us why you chose it?
Oh, heck. Vish, don't put me on the spot. You know, I'm a great dancer, but my vocabulary fails me often. Well, I don't know. I love this record. I do. You know, I'm also embarrassed of it and shy of it.
Yeah.
So I don't know. I really like The Volcano.
Yeah, that's a good one.
It used to be called The Cure for very obvious reasons.
Yes, there's some... Yes, as we've alluded to, there's some sort of 80s goth new wave thing happening. And I assume that's why it was called The Cure.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I also name-checked the band in the band. And it's just a cool... it was probably the first song that the three of us were like, this is going to be good.
Okay. Well, let's go out on that. Why not? I think that's a good call. Let's do it. This is The Volcano by Divine Right from their beautiful new album, Automato. Jose, I love you very much. I appreciate this time.
Love you too, Vish.
And I wish you the best luck in the future, and I hope I see you soon.
Me too. We're actually going to be touring out west in the spring.
Oh, hooray. March, maybe I'll be comfortable leaving my house, and I'll go see you.
Amazing. Yeah, we're playing Edmonton, believe it or not. We're
nice.
driving the van across Canada one more time.
All right, listen, you good luck on the trip, yeah. I hope I see you soon.
Yeah, you too. Lots of love to you and to everyone.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
Oh, that was nice. It was nice to have Jose back on the old show. Jose, thank you for being on this, the 721st episode of Creative Control, which is part of the Entertainment One podcast network and should be available wherever you get your podcasts, except for that one place where I took the show off. It was caused quite a bit of a hullabaloo. You remember that? Took the show off the one place, and then I got like articles, and like the national broadcaster want to talk to me. Then they want to talk to you when you take your show off of a thing, not about the show. Well, sometimes they also want to talk to me about the show. Everything's going well. Anyway, if you want to learn more about me and find old episodes of the show and sign up for my monthly newsletter, please visit vishkana.com. Also, like Creative Control on Facebook if you so desire. Follow me and the show on Twitter at @vishcreative, or follow just me on Twitter and on Instagram at @vishkana. I don't know which of the two me's is more interesting. I'm forgetting. I don't know. I can't tell you. I think maybe this is more interesting. I don't think I'm that interesting. Visit patreon.com/creativecontrol to make a flexible monthly donation if you can, please. $6 or more a month grants you access to extra special exclusive content, and you get the episodes a little bit earlier than everybody else if I am able to get them done in time. And if you're interested in receiving a Creative Control t-shirt, just message me on Patreon and I'll get you one while supplies last. $6 is the thing that gets you all those perks and frills, but you can donate any amount you want. You can do less than $6, you can do more, and you can change it at any time. It's very flexible, suits your needs and interests. So again, visit patreon.com/creativecontrol if you like the show and like to see it continue and like to contribute something in that regard. It would mean a lot. It does mean a lot. Thank you. Speaking of thanking people and things, I want to thank Pizza Trocadero, The Bookshelf, and Planet Bean Coffee in Guelph, Ontario, and Granddad's Donuts in Hamilton, Ontario, for their in-kind support for this particular show. Thanks, as always, to Jim Guthrie for lending me some music of his on the show. You can learn more about Jim at jimguthrie.org. And finally, thank you so much for listening to this episode with Jose from By Divine Right. You should check out Automato. It's great. Great record. I love Jose. I love By Divine Right. And so go see them and listen to their music. Also, please subscribe to this podcast and follow it. And most importantly, tell your friends who are losers and aren't doing this yet. That was mean. I don't think your friends are losers. They're friends with you. How can they be losers? Anyway, all I was getting at is if they don't like the show as much as you, I think you're better than them. This is taking a turn. Tell your friends about the show. Spread the word about it. That means a lot. I'm going to go. I feel like I've said some stupid things and I want to stop. I'll talk to you later. I'll be your friend. I'm not a loser. Well, maybe. Bye for now.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.